Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Monday edition. Today's date is the fifth day of March 2012, of course. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. It's great to have you here for another important broadcast. Got a guest coming up in a moment, a very important guest, a good friend, somebody I've been learning a great deal from over the years and spending a lot of time discussing some of the issues that we're going to bring up today about health and about something I wanted to share with you guys, because I have repeatedly throughout my broadcast told you all that I decided to leave a job that I had in the city to come out to the countryside, and I bought myself a dilapidated old farmhouse that was just needed 100% renovation, everything. It had nothing inside it. It was just a mess, and it still is by and large because of funding, but the land itself here had been left to kind of go fallow for 20 years, and there were old apple trees and old plum trees and pears and the whole bit, but not the kind of varieties you find in grocery stores, ladies and gentlemen. These were varieties that were local to this area. They're a little bit different looking. They taste different, especially the pears. But we started planting, red fruit and blueberry bushes, and we added to the apple trees some Granny Smiths and some others. And now we've got fruit trees all over the place, but there's always been, like I said, fruit trees everywhere, and blackberries that line the land that are wild. And so we make our own jams and jellies here, and that's what we're doing today. There's a producer of strawberries not far from here that has them underneath a polytunnel, because that's the time of year it is here to put them under a tunnel. And we got a big deal on these, real cheap. They were almost next to nothing, if you could believe it. And we made up about 25 kilos, 22 kilos altogether, when you add the sugar in, to strawberry jam and jelly. And we do that with apricots. We can our own stuff, and basically we save ourselves between 20% and 30% on the price of things in the grocery store. But that's not really the benefit. The benefit is the quality. There are no additives to my food. There's nothing going in there that I don't know about, in fact. And it's cheaper, again, like I said, and it's also quite enjoyable to know where your food's coming from. It's really an interesting relationship that we all used to have with our food. And frankly, I never had that relationship growing up as a kid. And here's something I'd like to add to that. I grew up in a town with about 17 to 20,000 people, and I never went to a farm in my whole growing up life. I didn't realize there was even any farms around me. I grew up in southern Massachusetts, southeastern Mass. But now that I'm an adult, I did a search in the area of where I grew up, and there are farms everywhere. I just never went to any of them and never knew they existed, and neither did my family. We bought our stuff, plastic covered, in the grocery store like everyone else. Well, we're at a point in time now with the Monsanto generation and the poisoning of our food and the price rises that are going on and the rest of it, where you have to take another look at your food sources. You have to take another look at doing things on your own. And this doesn't mean that because you live in the city or you live in a large community that you can't take a 20-minute, 30-minute drive outside of your community and locate a farm and find out what the produce is and find out when they harvest and find out if you could give the guy a couple of bucks above what he would get at wholesale, or even a little cheaper, and let you go harvest it yourself, and go out there as a family thing and save yourself a pack of money and get yourself better food and get yourself educated on how to take care of yourself. Because there may be a time in the United States, and I don't doubt that this is coming, we've talked about it before, where your knowledge on how to produce food for yourself is going to become life or death. And it may become, at least to save yourself from some of the food rioting and other things that I believe are probably on the way within the next 12 to 18 months. Anyway, that's one of the issues we'll talk about today, food, because food is a great source of health if you get the right foods in you. But also, medicine has taken a wrong turn over the last 100 years. And we've talked about the history of that in many broadcasts, but we're going to talk a little bit about what we can do in a practical way to ensure our health going through these stressful times, and maybe find ways around some of this allopathic system that we've developed in the United States and Europe and keep ourselves healthy in the face of what's coming. So I'm going to bring up my guest right now. Her name is Nancy Turner Banks, MD. She's a writer, a lecturer, a medical doctor, and just an all-around great resource for information of all types, and whether that be political or otherwise. And I'm going to bring her up right now. Nancy, are you with me?
Hello, Daryl. Yes, I am.
Well, you know, Nancy, as usual, it's my honor to have you on. We don't do a lot of shows together. We've done many over the years, but we don't do them often. Before we talked about this show, I have a friend over here that isn't well, and I've been looking into trying to get them help outside of the normal protocols that are asked for in certain diseases, and the medical establishment here in France was absolutely against it. And we're finding out today they're still against it, even though I had a possibility of them not being, well, they're back saying they don't want to do what we want to do. But there are helpful things that are attached to foods that we eat or natural substances that we take into our bodies that can really either ameliorate some of the damage that's happened to us from our environment or actually cure us from problems we've got. You want to talk a little bit about where we are with all of that kind of that conversation?
Sure. The cells in our body have a biological history. They evolved over billions of years in a particular environment, and the confusion about disease and cancer is simply that, because we do have enough information to understand how chronic diseases and cancer develop. And so, if you don't mind, I'd just like to take a few minutes to talk a little bit about evolutionary biology.
Okay.
It's pretty simple.
Yep.
And I think it will give people an idea of why we are developing so many chronic problems in today's environment. Well, the cells in our body are called eukaryotic cells. The reason they're called eukaryotic cells is because they have a nucleus which has a membrane. But the interesting thing about these eukaryotic cells is they have two types of DNA. They have a DNA in the nucleus, which we inherit from our mom and our dad, and they also have these little organelles inside of the liquid outside of the nucleus called the cytoplasm, and these organelles are called mitochondria. It turns out that the mitochondria are also ancient bacteria, and they also have their own DNA, and this DNA we inherit from our mom only. It's the DNA that comes through the maternal germline. The important thing about these two types of DNA is that they work together to keep the cell healthy, and I'll tell you how they developed. But most of our energy is made in the form of a molecule called ATP, and most of the ATP we use for sustaining ourselves on a daily basis. We make as much ATP a day as our body weight. And most of that ATP, that energy molecule, is made in that little organelle called the mitochondria. We have about 1,500 of those mitochondria in every cell. Some cells, such as the heart and the brain, which use much more energy, have more. And then we also have another way of making energy, but it's less efficient, and it's in the cytoplasm, and it's called glycolysis. And so the energy we make in our mitochondria, we get about 32 to 36 ATP. We're using oxygen, but using glucose as a backup mechanism, we only get about 2 ATP. So the energy, so in chronic disease and in cancer, we have a dysfunction of our energy metabolism, and it turns out that many cancer cells are using the glycolysis, the less efficient way in which to produce energy. So how does that happen? Well, it happened that about 2 billion years ago, when the Earth first started, there was no oxygen in the environment. But as the life forms developed, they excreted oxygen as a waste product. But oxygen is can be very damaging. It has extra electrons, and it can damage cells. So the cells had to learn how to use oxygen. And about 2 billion years ago was when we have the oxygen level that we have now, which is about 20% of oxygen in the air. And that's when these two different types of cells, the cells that had the original DNA and the cells that were the mitochondria of bacteria, they joined forces. Mm-hmm. So these two cells got together, and now they are the cells, the eukaryotic cells that we have in our body. And so when we develop cancer, what the cell is doing is reverting to the ancient form of survival in an environment that is hostile. And so what creates a hostile environment? Well, in today's world, we are exposed to many kinds of hostilities, such as heavy metals, vaccines, certainly the pesticides and the pollution in our environment, such things as fluoride in our water, lead, mercury, and on and on and on. All of those things can create a hostile environment.
And how important is the radiation poisoning of our bodies?
Certainly the radiation is very oxidizing, and mm-hmm. so the cell also operates in an environment where it has a particular electromagnetic force and an electromagnetic potential across the membrane. And when that electromagnetic potential is disrupted, you can begin, and which is what happens with electromagnetic radiation and nuclear radiation, you can begin to get disruptions of the cellular metabolism. So all of these environmental things that mostly over the last 50 or so years, 50 to 100 years, have been introduced are very damaging to our cellular metabolism. And if we don't eat the proper food or take in the proper antioxidants, over time we can begin to damage the way our cells function. Now, most people understand, and this is not complicated, because most people have a car, and they understand if they put the wrong kind of gasoline or the wrong kind of oil, that, you know, they don't have air pressure in the tires, and they don't do the things to keep the car functioning, the car is going to break down.
Yep.
And so, basically, the body is the same. If we don't give the body what it needs to sustain itself, it's going to break down.
Well, now, Nancy, we've talked privately about what I'm going to bring up now. I have an area general practitioner, a doctor here, and he's a good man, and he also has been given the job of, in the event of a nuclear problem at one of the power plants or another source of nuclear poisoning of the environment, he's the head guy for evacuation or for treating the public and so forth. But he also happens to be the doctor that sees us when we get sick. And I mentioned to him, because of Fukushima and because of the environmental poisons that are being let out from that place, he said that there has been a huge uptick in the amount of radiation being found in the soil, but there are places around Europe that have a 500% above normal reading coming out of radiation. He said I asked him if we're going to see a big uptick in cancer in the next 5 to 7 years, and he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, much sooner than that. And when I asked him how bad it'll be, he says, I can't tell you, but it's going to be an important increase. And so what we're seeing here is that many more of the people we care for and love are going to come down with cancers of different types. And we're not going to be able to avoid it in some instances, because this is the world we live in. So what is your take on what I just said, and what can you add to that possibility?
Well, we in the United States, it's already been reported several months ago that we've had an increase of, I believe it's 14,000 excess deaths as a result, and an increase in infant mortality as a result of the Fukushima disaster. The big problem is, in terms of public health, the people who are supposed to be monitoring public health, every time we have one of these real disasters, they don't give the public the information they need to begin to protect themselves.
Yep.
For example, after the Fukushima disaster, if they had been a rational public health system, they certainly would have been telling people to increase their iodine intake.
Yep. Yep.
Which they haven't. They certainly would have been telling people to increase their vitamin and nutrient intake, which they haven't. They certainly would have been telling people to increase their polyphenol intake and intake such one of the most important antioxidants, which is called glutathione, which they haven't. So unfortunately, people are going about their daily business, eating and drinking as usual, without any thought that they may need to support their metabolism to a greater degree because there are these excess stresses.
Yeah. And so now, he said the next 3 to 5 years we're going to see this wave, and it could be a tsunami wave. I hate to put that into the conversation here, but I mean, it may be a health tsunami coming, because on top of the problems, Nancy, of the environmental stresses, what we're seeing also is further deterioration in people's finances, which often means that they don't eat as well, they're under more personal stress, which is also a precursor of cancer as well, because if you're in a very stressed environment, you utilize nutrients in a different way. And so all of these things are kind of the perfect storm of bad health is kind of building here. Is that fair to say?
Well, basically, in the 1930s, a scientist by the name of Otto Warburg was looking at cancer metabolism, and basically which actually is the metabolism of many chronic diseases, and basically he said, at the cellular level, it doesn't matter if it's an infection or a toxin or a psychological problem, that at the cellular level, it all functions the same way. That's why, you know, people wonder how chronic stress can affect the immune system. But chronic stress works through your hormonal system, your hypothalamic, adrenal, pituitary system. You have an outpouring of cortisol from your adrenal glands. On a short-term basis, this fight-or-flight response is a very good response. But on a long-term basis, that outpouring of cortisol suppresses your immune system, and that allows not only infections, but cancers to develop over the long term. And right now, we're seeing an enormous amount of, with this transition in the economy in so many countries, we're seeing enormous stress on individuals and families.
So now that we've established that we have reasons to be very concerned, let's talk a little bit about, I started by opening the show up talking about what we eat. And of course, and I mentioned something to you before we went on the show here that I never knew, Nancy, that the processed foods have a type of oil in them that are actually not good for us in the amounts that they're being presented to us. And we get them by buying French fries at McDonald's, or we get them from eating processed cakes and cookies and pies and all this other stuff. And it's called omega-6. Now, omega-6 by itself is not necessarily a problem if it's balanced with other oil types like omega-3. But the fact is, in our modern world, we're getting way too much of that. And so, in other words, that's one example of so many that we're doing on the nutritional side, where people are setting themselves up to be hosts for other opportunistic problems.
Well, the omega-3 to the omega-6 ratio should be about 1:1 to 1:3. And with today's diet in the United States anyway, we're finding that the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio is 1:21 to 30. So that's extraordinarily out of balance.
Is there an obesity link in that, Nancy?
Well, it's not only there's an obesity link, but the other important thing is that the omega-6s unfortunately open up a cascade of inflammatory responses through a group of molecules called prostaglandins. And so what the omega-6s do is increase the inflammatory response in the body. And, of course, it's inflammation in the body that leads to a lot of these chronic diseases, such as heart disease.
And you read that article that's by posted on the site, because it's actually out quite a few places on the net right now. That doctor said he has seen, with all of the so-called war on heart disease and all this anti-cholesterol nonsense and everything, heart disease is no more reduced than it's ever been. And in fact, we've got associated diseases that come from this imbalance of omega 6 to 3 that are actually more serious. And he was talking about the rise in diabetes. And the obesity problem and the rest of it. So this heart surgeon, this 25-year heart surgeon, saying it's all been a fraud. But you're not surprised at any of that, and nor am I after having done the research I've done. So what do we say to people that are on these corn oils and on these safflower oils and that are using these in their diet? What do we say? Get off them, right?
Yeah. First of all, it's for, you know, I remember having this conversation about a year ago with my sister, because she was so concerned about, you know, high fats. And I was telling her that the problem is with these so-called low fats is that the kind of fats that they're using, but also almost all of these low-fat foods are high in sugar.
Yes.
And, of course, if they're high in sugar, when they're going to be converted to fat in the body. So that's one of the reasons why people are getting so fat, because they're eating the wrong kinds of fats, and they're eating, when you read the labels on these low fat products, you will see that they are loaded with sugars. As they say in Mexico, es una locura. It's a craziness. And so what people are doing is that they think, because there has been this focus on low fat, they have been eating increased amounts of sugar. And so we can see that in the way people look. If you look at pictures of Americans from the Second World War, even up through the 50s, you will hardly see any fat people.
That's right. That's right.
You'll see some people that are sort of heavy set by today's standards, but they're not really, you know, with the rolls of fat rolling off of them as we see today. It just didn't happen. And as a matter of fact, there were quite a few thin people, and that was more common than not, and they weren't unhealthy. So I think that we've had an incredible change in our diet over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
The number of processed foods that we've introduced into our diet in order to, quote, save time has really damaged our health significantly. The other big problem in the United States has been the farm policies. Our farm policies have been supporting, say, big corn farmers,
yep.
As opposed to small organic farmers.
Yep.
So what does that do? That allows these corn farmers to sell their products at a reduced rate. And so everything has corn in it. The cows that ordinarily should not be eating corn are eating corn. The chickens are eating corn. The pigs are eating corn. And we're eating corn. Everybody's eating corn and corn sugars. And so that's another source of the wrong kinds of fatty acids. And sugars.
And isn't the corn sweetener got a glucose that is almost immediately turning into fat in people's bodies? It's not like a regular refined sugar. It's a different type.
So the problem is also this, if you read the labels on American products, even salt has sugar in it. If you read the label on table salt,
yes,
it has sugar in it. Everything has sugar in it.
Well, and you know, the other one that people don't really notice either, and they're feeding this to our animals as well, is soybeans and soy proteins. And soy, in its raw form, which is what these animals are eating it in, have high levels of estrogen. And that estrogen gets translated into our bodies through our food chain, and there's an effemination of men. Men are becoming more effeminate. Girls are getting their periods much younger. And that's a biological change that's taken place because of our diet as well. Is that fair to say as well?
But it's not just the soy, it's also the plastics. Because the plastics also have chemicals which are feminizing. And remember, all the babies, everything around the baby now is plastic. You know, the moms used to sterilize glass bottles. You can't even, I don't even know if you can find glass baby bottles anymore.
They're making them illegal in France, plastic baby bottles.
Are they?
Yes.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because, one of the things I discovered is that when babies are born, they're already born with over 230 genotoxic, mutagenic chemicals in their bloodstream.
Mm.
So even before our babies start life, they're born with all of these toxins in their bloodstream. And because of many of these toxins, the sperm count in men in the West has been dropping over the last 50 years also.
Yep.
So we have a big fertility problem, and part of the fertility problem is related to the drop in the sperm count. But not only the drop in the sperm count, but the functioning of the quality of the sperm as well. So, we mindlessly allow, for example, in the United States recently, there was a group of people who came together because they wanted to eat wholesome food, and they were like a committee of people that it was a private club, a buying club, and
yep.
They were buying organic raw milk mm-hmm. from a particular farmer that they were familiar with. And the FDA and the USDA, they had a raid
yep.
of their center with armed. It was like as if it were a drug center.
Yeah.
Now, the government is actively going after people who want to eat healthy, but if you put a drug like Vioxx, which injured 100,000 people and killed 50,000 people with heart attack, you can put that drug on the market. Or if you're a Monsanto, you can put GMO food on the market without any kind of research, and the government will approve it, even though the animal research has shown quite an amount of damage. So we have to begin to ask ourselves, what kind of society are we living in where the government is telling us what we can and cannot put into our bodies? That certainly doesn't speak much for our level of freedom.
No, and Nancy, you know, with the recent reports on fracking that's going on and the poisoning of the water table, and on top of that, we've got, of course, the GMO foods that you talked about, especially the corn, but we're also using Roundup Ready products in our fields, which is also poisoning, and now they found out that this stuff goes right into the DNA of the recipient of that food and poisons it. I mean, this stuff is absolutely horrendous, Roundup, and Roundup Ready foods are murderous. And there have been some successes recently of farmers actually fighting back against Monsanto. Here in France, a farmer came in contact with the herbicide, and he became very ill. And, of course, Monsanto threw everything they could at this guy to beat him in court, and they lost, finally. It was the first time they had lost a case in Europe, and this is a very good thing because it sets a precedent. But our wins are rare. Our wins are few and far between. The agenda of eugenics, or the agenda of sickening all of us to help us pipeline into this medical system, seems to be intact. Now, I've experienced recently an attempt at trying to change the mind of a doctor here to take a different look at a very difficult disease. And these people are absolutely reticent when it comes to change. They just don't want to even look at anything. And we got a bad report today from the colleague of the man we were supposed to get help from, and he doesn't want to do anything with this. And it's going to mean life or death, Nancy. And, you know,
this is the other thing I'd like, especially to let patients, to people who are not yet patients but who may be in the future,
yep.
to start finding those clinics and those doctors who might be willing to to treat you differently than the mainstream suggests.
Yep.
Now, I can't speak for Europe, but I know that there are still places and doctors in the United States, because this last weekend I was just in San Francisco at a conference sponsored by the OHM Society. And basically, it's a group of doctors, almost all of them are traditionally allopathic trained. Some of them are naturopathics from Bastyr University. And all of them are trying in their practices to look at alternative ways of treating chronic diseases, including cancer, and have used some of the things that the cancer establishment has claimed don't work. But they are finding that they are getting good results.
Yep.
Such as high-dose vitamin C. They are using insulin therapy with a low-dose chemotherapy. So they're using other kinds of therapies successfully with their cancer patients. So what I suggest is that people try to find who these doctors are. I've just given you one organization. There's a clinic in Kansas called the Riordan Clinic,
yep.
R-I-O-D-A-N, Riordan Clinic. And there is a Dr. Gonzalez in New York. There's a Dr. Maji Ali in New York. So there are, Gary Knoll is not an MD, but he's a PhD, and he has numerous protocols where he has been able to reverse chronic diseases and life-threatening diseases. So there are people out there, and what I suggest is that before you get sick, try to find somebody who might be able to help you.
Yeah. Now, the Riordan Clinic, for a little ancillary information here, has treated over 40,000 people. So we're not talking about a fly-by-night group here. We're talking about a well-established protocol that has had, as you said, some very positive results in some areas. One of them is, as you said, high-dose vitamin C. And for you people out there who think high-dose vitamin C means you take grams of vitamin C by drinking it, that will just make you have a terrible case of the runs. Yeah, you get diarrhea like you can't even imagine. Now, we're talking about intravenous. Now, here's the thing, Nancy. Now, this is perfect to talk about. There's a move afoot in the government to make it illegal to use vitamin C intravenously.
Of course, and this is people need to wake up, and I think unfortunately there's so much economic stress on people, and this is what they're doing. They're very slick because people are so focused on their economic situation right now that they're pushing. Every time I open up something, I see another law has been passed. You know, I'm not a John Stossel fan, but I saw this. And since I don't live in the United States anymore, I don't have access to the program. But John Stossel recently, I saw on the internet, did a program about everything illegal. And basically what he was showing that how in the United States, it's illegal to do everything now. They can find, if you're walking down the street practically, it can be illegal.
Yep.
But he was looking at young kids who were opening lemonade stands or Girl Scouts who were selling Girl Scout cookies. All the things that traditionally kids have done in order to earn money. And then what happens? The police show up and shut down. Sometimes they show up with guns blazing to shut down a lemonade stand. I mean, how crazy have we gotten in our country that we have allowed it to go this far?
But do you think it's the frog in the pot, kind of? Because, I mean, it's the only explanation I can have. Either that or fluoride has done worse damage than I can believe. Because, the frog in the pot scenario where you've been nickel and dimed into this false sense of things being normal, or the new normal, as many people would describe it. But the fact of the matter is, it seems quick to me. I mean, but maybe my perspective's different. I am in my mid-50s, and I...
Well, I think what happened is that since 9/11, they have used 9/11 as an excuse to pull out the stops and to really, I think we're destroying we're witnessing the total destruction of the Constitution. Remember, George Bush says the Constitution is nothing but a GDP piece of paper. And so if the president of the United States who put his hand on a Bible and claims to, that he's going to defend the Constitution, will say that publicly, we're in trouble.
Yeah, but he might have had his hand on Aleister Crowley's Bible, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, well, whatever.
Hey, Nancy, I don't know what he was swearing on. It might be the Satanic Bible. Who knows? You know, the interesting thing that I'm trying to get across today, and this is, let's talk a little bit about one of your more important issues, and this is with another chronic disease, AIDS, and you did speak on it at that conference, where they have been able to actually promote a disease when the disease they're promoting doesn't exist in the form they're promoting it. In other words, there is a disease called poverty, and yes, it has all these different symptoms that make you weak enough to die over. And if you give somebody additional stress like a vaccine after you haven't been eating well for 10 years, that might just put you down to the ground. Well, the point of the matter is that they don't only just do this with AIDS. They do this with a whole host of false truths. Like a good one, I read recently about people who have root canals. And root canals being the source of a lot of blood poisonings and disease, and it's not a safe procedure, and it hasn't been deemed one, and people use it routinely. And I mean, there's so many things out there that they've just lied to us about straight out, and that are really doing us damage.
Well, one of the things that I found out when I was researching my book, AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, and the reason I called it that is because the medical system is clear to me right now that the medical system is being used as part of the empire system to take away certain rights that people have. For example, if they say that they're going to give vaccines for a public health issue, they can say, well, it's for the public good. And so the people will say, oh, yeah, it's for the public good, and they'll line up like sheep. And so it's part of the psychological, low-intensity psychological warfare against the general population. The healthcare system is being used that way. And the other thing that I discovered is this, and it's the psychology of the pharmaceutical industry, which came out of the chemical industry, which was started by people who had the eugenic philosophy. And basically, they also, you could trace these people back to the opium days of the British East India Company.
Yep.
So what did the British East India Company learn, and why did they push opium into China? For two reasons. One, because it was a product which was addictive, which means you would have repeat customers.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it had enormous cash flows. So if you're in the pharmaceutical industry, what do you want? You want repeat customers, which gives you enormous cash flows. So is your idea to heal people so that they don't have to come back? Or is your idea to keep them on hold with a chronic disease that they have to repeatedly buy your medication over and over again? Well, that latter idea is the idea of the pharmaceutical industry.
Yep.
You don't treat the disease, you treat the symptoms of the disease, and that way you keep people in a holding pattern, but you keep them coming back to buy your product.
Well, you know, remember the big push in the early 90s for Prozac and Ellaril and all these other happy pills?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that push, especially the Ellaril, I talked to somebody who ended up taking Ellaril, and now it's, I think, 14...
Ellaville?
And it's like 14 or 15 years they've been on it. But I said to this person, why would you take that? And she said, well, in the beginning, it made me feel better, made me feel more alive, more up. My outlook was better. She said, but that has gone away. That no longer is the case when I take it. Now, she can't quit taking this stuff because the effects of it to stop would be horrendous. And there has to be a long weaning period from that kind of drug. But the Prozac that's out there and the rest of it, do you know that all the people who have ever taken a mood enhancer of any type are on a list, and that they're being squared up to be denied any right to the Second Amendment whatsoever? Then they'll be used. That will be used for a denial of their right to own a handgun or a rifle.
Oh,
or
really?
Yes.
Really, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. Well, because automatically by taking that, you're admitting that you've got some emotional questions.
Well, but the other thing, when you take that, the drugs themselves create this instability.
Yes.
Which is well known.
Yes.
Because, as you know, almost every one of the young people who've been involved in school shootings have been on one of these psychiatric drugs.
That's right.
And the known side effects, for example, are suicidal ideation or anger, in which you want to lash out at the world. So those are the known side effects of these drugs, and yet they keep giving them to people. But, you know, this is the United States has become Aldous Huxley's dream come true.
And it's not very brave, and it's not very new with this world. This is tyranny. This is what it is. But
well, the question is why, you know, and I think that we have to begin to address this and ask ourselves, why are Americans so willing to submit themselves to all of these drugs?
Well, what is your take on that? Why is that?
I think that, first of all, we've been trained to trust our government, and we've been trained to trust our institutions. And so on that level, we do. And so that's part of it. Another part of it is that we don't want to take personal responsibility, and we want somebody else to tell us what to do. And I think a third reason is that the public has been truly dumbed down with fluoride in the water.
Yeah. I agree. Well, and the educational system. Do you know, I'll give you a little kind of anecdote here. They took a child. I don't even know where this report is anymore. The kid was 11 years old, and they never sent him to school. But during that time, they sat down for like a month and a half and taught him mathematics, and then they gave him a month and a half of English and a month and a half. And most of the English was about reading. And the math was about doing problems above their level so that they would progress quickly. By the time the kid was 11 years old, he had completed calculus. He already was reading novels, James Joyce and the rest of it, by the time he was 11. But the interesting thing was that they tested him when he was 6 years old, and he had an average intelligence. And this kid at 11 years old was already past the level of a high school graduate at 11. So my point is that we're not teaching people to become capable readers or capable mathematicians. We're teaching them to become automatons and robots that follow the instructions of the leadership that's in charge of them, or says they're in charge.
Yeah, I just had a big discussion with a friend of mine recently about the school system, and of course he was trying to do this simple-minded thing that I think a lot of people end up doing within the left-right paradigm, is blaming the teachers' unions.
Mm-hmm.
The teachers' unions could be a problem, but the teachers' unions don't make policy for what's going to be taught in the school,
nor do
they write the textbooks.
That's right.
And see, we never go to, and it's just like in medicine, people never want to go to the root of the problem. These think tanks that are tax-free, that are filled with people who are scheming against the American people, they write these ideas, they very publicly talk about what the object of these ideas are, and then they implement them through the various universities when they design courses and write the textbooks. And they very purposely have turned our children into lab rats rather than people who can be educated. They train them. They don't educate them, and they train them to be workers or cogs in a wheel rather than independent thinkers. Because the last thing you want if you're trying to control people are independent thinkers.
Well, Nancy, do you remember when you were a kid that you had they were phasing it out when I was a child, but I had it in growing up. I had a class called civics.
Oh, yeah, we always had civics. Civics was something you did throughout.
Well, that was teaching you about what your rights and responsibilities were under the Constitution. Isn't that what the civics were in your day, most of it?
Yeah, and not only that, you learned how your government worked from the local level,
yes,
the township level, to the county, to the state, to the federal. So you learned all those levels of government. So you were well aware of which levels of government did what.
Well, and now they call it social studies of sorts, and it's like, it's not. It's a study on how to socialize you into following the orders of the people above you. And you've lost what it is to be responsible. And most people don't even know that the common law in our country is still the supreme law of the land. And they don't understand that their relationship to that common law has been blocked by corporate law, and that they live in a corporatized environment, when in fact, had they known in the beginning that they were being placed under a corporate structure, they would have opted out of that and said, no, I want to remain in this other structure that was founded by, this country was founded under. And we've lost this over the last 125, 30 years. Since just after the Civil War, they really went hog wild on destroying individuals' rights to access change in their government or individual rights. And you can see that, Nancy, our history. They used to talk about people. Two men would have a disagreement, and they would pull out their swords, or they'd pull out their pistols, and they'd walk paces and they'd shoot each other. Well, they had every right to, because they were sovereign. They had a right to have a dispute settled any way that they saw fit. That sovereignty has gone, and now we live in a nanny state that tells us everything we're going to do with our lives, from soup to nuts, from cradle to grave. And
including, and most particularly, as we're talking about today, the healthcare system.
Yes.
Because one of the things that we should stand up for, if for nothing else, is the right to not put anything in our bodies that we object to.
Well, I got a little story for you. Over here in France, they really, if you go in and you want to work with kids or anything and be around children, they're almost, they threaten your job if you don't get vaccinated. The teachers, they all have to get vaccinated. Unless you say to them that you are against it religiously. And if you say, I have a religious objection to that, they stop right away and allow you on your way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't say you have, it's just that you don't want to, they'll take your job from you.
Well, in the United States, every state has to have an exemption, and there are three types of exemptions. There's the religious, medical, and philosophical. So most states, very few states have all three. Most states have retained the medical reason and the religious reason. Many of them are taking away the philosophical reason. But this is the thing that people need to know.
Yes.
Once you go to your pediatrician and you tell the pediatrician you do not want your children vaccinated, the pediatrician should not dismiss you, and also the pediatrician should not ask you any further questions, because it's none of his or her business. And further, the pediatrician should have forms in the office to sign for you to say that you do not want to be vaccinated. But you know, even in the schools, there have been multiple reports now that parents are filling out those forms, even with schools, that there is not to be any vaccination or any medication of their child while in school, but the public health officials are going to the school vaccinating children without the consent of the parents.
Yep.
And that has been happening recently also.
Yep.
So it doesn't seem, see, this is what, it doesn't seem to matter anymore whether or not we have rights. What matters is that the bureaucrats are going to do what they're going to do. And not only that, they are in the process now of trying to take people's children away from them if they don't follow what the bureaucrats want. It doesn't even matter that the laws are on the book that you have the right to refrain from doing these things.
Well, Nancy, you know, if you've done any, and I know you've done some observation of what the birth certificate means. And that birth certificate basically turns you over to the government control. There's a bond issued on your number, And you become part of the corporate structure. You become part of the Admiralty Law or the UCC, Universal Commercial Code. And sadly, once you've signed on to that, they actually have a contractual right to do the things they do. But they won't tell you that.
No, let me also say something about some of the things that happen to babies at birth that parents are not aware of. Because you very clearly have talked about that birth certificate and what that birth certificate means in terms of making your child a commodity for the banks.
Yes.
But also, when the babies are born now, they have been taking DNA samples. This is something that was instituted when George Bush II was president. And they have been caught, first of all, they are not asking for the permission of the parents to do this. They are doing it automatically. And they have been caught doing studies on this DNA that they are taking without permission. And, of course, that violates Nuremberg principles, but nobody is who's going to prosecute. So your child's DNA is taken, even without you, your permission. The other thing that happens in most hospitals now is as soon as the baby is born, the baby is given either medication, antibiotics, or the baby is given a vaccine. Often it's the hepatitis vaccine. Now, this hepatitis vaccine there is no reason why that hepatitis vaccine should be given to babies in the United States. There has never been a problem with hepatitis among children in the United States, and there never will be. The problem is that giving newborns a vaccine at birth alters their immune system. And it sets their immune system in such a way that the immune system is not allowed to develop normally.
And you can end up with Crohn's disease or with different types of, with the adjuvants in there. You can have neural problems, all kinds of. What are some of the problems babies can end up developing from being vaccinated?
What we're seeing is this increase in autism and
yes.
autism spectral disorders, which
yep.
are neurological disorders.
Hmm.
Associated with that are bowel problems.
Yep.
Many of these children have acute and chronic diarrhea. The other thing that we're seeing is many ADD and ADHD, other neurological disorders. We're also seeing this huge increase in childhood allergies, skin rashes, ear infections, and those kinds of allergic types of problems. And most of that is related to the fact that the immune system doesn't balance out for at least the first 3 years. And some people are saying it may not mature fully until 18 years. So, but if you start giving children vaccines the minute they leave the womb, you are fixing the immune system in such a way that part of the immune system is never allowed to develop.
And that's the mitochondria that we discussed in the beginning of the show.
Well, no, those are not the mitochondria. Those are the different cells, the subsets of the immune system, the different types of cells. For example, the immune system has two parts. It has a part called the humoral part, which makes antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
And antibodies are sort of like the missile defense. And
yeah.
then it has another part called cell-mediated immunity, which makes a gas called nitric oxide, and that's your sort of gas warfare against microbes. So if these two parts of the immune system are not able to develop normally, and generally it's the cell-mediated immunity that's suppressed and the humoral-mediated that's overstimulated. So that's the problem that we're having with all of the diseases that we're seeing in young children, including diabetes that we haven't seen much of in the past. Our so-called healthcare system is really creating diseases in us, and this is more So now we have these diseases, and so now we become, it's like the opium again. We become these chronic users of medications which simply treat the symptoms and don't do anything to really eliminate the cause of the disease.
Well, now that this hepatitis is very interesting, because the hepatitis vaccine has been identified as the origins of the major outbreak of so-called HIV, because they pushed this in the New York gay community and the Cape Cod gay community, that everybody should get an anti-hepatitis injection.
Yeah, and remember, this was a subset that were already immune suppressed. So if you have people who are already immune suppressed, and then you give them a vaccine, and you have to understand how that hepatitis vaccine was made. They were taking the antibodies from some of the sickest people on the planet to make that original vaccine. So now you have a vaccine which suppresses immunity even more in a population that's already immune suppressed.
And so it was a perfect storm to make this group sick.
It's a perfect storm. It's just like, you know, in Africa they it's related to the polio and smallpox vaccine. So you go to a continent where people don't have clean water, sufficient food, and are under chronic stress from the number of extractive industries and the guns and warfare that are being dumped onto the continent to disrupt their societies. And now, on top of that, you're shooting them up with vaccines that are suppressing their immune system. And what do you think you're going to get? You're going to get a lot of people who are very sick.
Yeah. Wow. All of this stuff is not new to the listeners here, because we have discussed some of these subjects in the past, Nancy. Where are we going now? What do you see? I mean, on a geopolitical thing, it doesn't necessarily have to be exactly related to medicine, but what do you see happening? I mean, you travel a lot, you speak to a lot of people, you read extensively on what's happening. What is your take on where we are right now?
I think there's a subset of people who are beginning to wake up. I mean, how many people can have autistic kids before you have a group who actually know what's going on, who say, listen, you know, I had a perfectly normal kid. My kid was developing. My kid was walking, talking, and doing all the things. My kid went to get this third vaccine, and within days, my child had regressed to he wasn't talking, he wasn't walking, and he was having chronic diarrhea, and he was in chronic pain, and I was unable to give him any relief. How many kids? I mean, we went from 1 in 10,000 maybe 30 or 40 years ago to 1 in 100 or less than that. 1 in 90 kids are now having some problem. Well, so now you have thousands of families who are dealing with a situation. So people are beginning to talk to each other. And so I think what is happening is that we're seeing a grassroots movement of parents who are beginning to say, we want answers. We're not going to submit our kids to these things anymore, and we want to know how we're maintaining our health. So I see that there's, you know, for me, I think that for the first time in a long time, I'm seeing some real grassroots movements of people who are willing to challenge the status quo.
Well, you know, when we started out together, and even before that, this wasn't the case. There were a lot of people out there trying to connect the dots. And one of the things we've been able to do, Nancy, over time here is connect a lot of those dots for the people, or if not do it for them, at least encourage them to go out and take a stand on some of these issues. And I've seen a lot of change. I have. And I wonder often, is it too little too late? And what do you think? Do you think we're going to get there in time, or do you think this...
Well, you know, I think this is the thing. I think there's always multiple things going on in the world at the same time.
Yeah.
The people who run the banking system have a plan, and they think they're on board to have this new world, one world order. You know, no one who's had this idea of an empire, even if they were able to consolidate it, it never lasted very long, because there are too many variables. And one of the variables is that ordinary people have the ability to use their minds, their hearts, and their spirits to figure out that there's another way. And I think that's what people are doing. And the other thing I'd like to say about this alternative movement, I really like to see people stop, spending so much time fighting with each other. It's just very distracting and very immature, and it shows that they're working at the same low energy level as the people who would take the power away from ordinary people. That we need to talk about how we're going to find solutions. And today we've talked about some of the solutions. We've talked about how to approach the healthcare system, about finding physicians who might be able to take care of you in the way that you want before you get sick, about how you opt out of vaccines if you don't want them for your children, and about how to look for healthy food and to be able to find healthy food in your environment, in your neighborhood. So those are some of the things that people, we've talked about that people can begin to contemplate and act on.
Well, Nancy, we've reached the end of our hour here, and I want to let you know that this is really, where you are and where I am, I'm trying to spread my nuts and bolts way of living, because I didn't have any capacity when I came here. I didn't understand how to can anything or, I was a city dweller. I came to France from Manhattan. I had no idea how to do any of this stuff. But the learning curve is fast if you're interested. And there are plenty of resources available on the internet. So if you're listening to this broadcast, you certainly have the ability to jump onto different websites and learn how to plant a garden, even if it's just on your balcony, or if you can find area farms in where you live, or learn how to.
And everywhere you go, there are garden clubs.
Garden club. That's right.
That will help you to get started.
And here's the other one that I want to leave everybody with, because the radiation is a problem. There are substances out there that can help you to chelate radiation. One of them, of course, is vitamin C. But that's one that has a very good long history of being able to help chelate certain types of isotopes from you. But another one also is chlorella. But if you don't have access to chlorella, there's spirulina. There are other types of things that all have different ways of chelating or different levels of chelation. Chelating, basically, ladies and gentlemen, is binding to toxins or metals in the body and getting them out of you. Chlorella was actually used after Fukushima to help keep the workers free of radiation. And it worked. It did. Many of these people are still alive today that worked very close to Chernobyl. But again, we're having to play catch up on a lot of this stuff. And there are a lot of new listeners out there that haven't heard any of these recommendations before, because I have said a lot of these things before. Do you have anything to part the parting comments to make to the listeners, Nancy?
Just the thing that I said before, that I'm really encouraged by the number of people that I see who are making the transition into healthier lifestyles and who are beginning to question the healthcare system and beginning to stand up to it. So I think, Daryl, keep having this information, putting this information out there for people.
Yep.
And I think that people are slowly coming to it, and especially at a time of crisis, it's very important to maintain your health, because that's what's going to get you through the following days.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there it is. That's Dr. Nancy Turner Banks, MD, a friend of mine, and a wonderful author. You got to get her book, AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire.
Deadly virus.
Virus of International Greed. The deadly virus of international greed. That's the subtitle of it. It is an incredible read. I've read through that book three separate times, Nancy. I have to tell you, and I've gotten more out of it each time, because my level of understanding going into the it was limited, but now years later I have spent a lot of time learning about health and health issues, and each time I go into the book it there are new revelations that I am brought to here about my health and about what I can do to be proactive in taking my health to better levels. So ladies and gentlemen, this is Nancy Turner Banks and Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please take care of your families and be well. Bye bye now.